2 p.m. Eastern, here on PRN.
Are you craving real talk about parenting today? I'm Louise Kuo Habakus.
And I'm Allison McNeil.
We are the co-hosts of Fearless Parent Radio. If you feel like your instincts are better than 90% of what you're hearing, it's time to tune in to a provocative new show that's funny, smart, and honest. Fear sells, but not here. From hair in the sink to hair on end, nothing is off limits.
Tune in to hear writers, experts, and parents with guts and strong opinions. Listen Wednesdays, 11 a.m. Eastern at PRN.FM. If you miss the show live, catch us 24/7 on iTunes. For a radio show that's blasting through fear and finding a dynamic way forward.
PRN.FM, your station for progressive viewpoints on politics, economics, health, the environment, and a whole lot more. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. This is our Talk Back program, where you'll have an opportunity to call in and share your thoughts, points of view, ask questions, make statements. Our number throughout the United States and Canada, 888-888. What, no, hold on 1 second. What was that? I think it's, I have too many eights in there. 888-874-4888. That's it. 888-874-4888. You can also listen to this program on the telephone anywhere in the United States. 401-347-0456. 401-347-0456 or 712-432-7231, 712-432-7231. Today, I'm going to begin by giving the latest on health and healing, including new information on kava for stress, anxiety, depression, and sleeplessness, why every woman needs to have a gluten antibody test before pregnancy, by Dr. Jill Timon from Green Med Info, how to reduce pain and cramping with white willow bark, and a lot more. Always some peer-reviewed mainstream literature supporting alternative healing. Then a brief commentary by Ralph Nader on what we don't know in the information age, published by Common Dreams. Also from Stephen Ledman, the leading critical progressive thinker, a commentary, Obama's War on Freedom. And then a concept that most people never think about, the association of controlling global warming with beyond capitalism and growth, meaning can we have a healthy environment and still keep our existing economic model of always having to base everything upon more growth, more profits, more capital, more growth, more profits, more capital. The commentary is from Richard Smith of Truth Out. It's a really critical analysis. And then I'll open up for you to share your points of view on that as well. We have so many things to talk about. Let's begin. I have put everyone I know on a gluten-free diet for decades, simply because I saw that when I was not eating any bread, I felt better. And it didn't matter that the bread might have been whole grain. More often than not, it was still made from whole grain wheat. And we don't eat a really healthy wheat in the United States. Our wheat is mainly genetically engineered. Our corn is genetically engineered. So many things is genetically engineered or is is used in some way, processed in some way, if it's not genetically engineered, that makes it unhealthy. Here is the latest on this from Dr. Jill Timon. She says, quote, it is becoming more well known that poor digestion, leaky gut, and dysbiosis can lead to health problems outside of the GI tract. In several previous studies, it has been shown the effects of gluten, that's wheat, on the brain, as well as on the effects of the cardiovascular system. In addition to these hazards, current research indicates that a clear relationship between a mother's sensitivity to gluten and the mental health of her child. There was a study recently published in the American Journal of Psychiatry. Swedish researchers investigated whether levels of immunoglobulin A, or IgA, in particular those immunoglobulins directed at gluten, were associated with a later diagnosis of non-affected psychotic disorder, like schizophrenia. Now, just a little background on this, so I'll kind of try to walk you through this biochemistry. IgG immunoglobulins are the immune factors passed on to the newborn from the mother, predominantly in the last month of pregnancy. They are derived from maternal circulation and transferred across the placenta. Now, these factors respond to the immediate environment that the baby will be born into and will protect the baby from possible antigens such as fur, the hair of dogs and cats, anything in that environment that could trigger an allergen. Now, since they come directly from the mother's circulation, high levels of particular IgG globulins are indicative of the mother's reactivity to these substances. In this case, IgG globulins studied were what is called gliadin, a component of gluten that can be measured in the blood. Well, what they found was that when the scientists found that mothers in the group with the top 10% of the anti-gliadin antibodies had offspring with a 70% likelihood to develop schizophrenia later in life. Now, think of that. Mothers in the group with the top 5% of anti-gliadin antibodies had offspring with an incredible 240% chance of developing schizophrenia as an adult. Needless to say, it goes without saying that there is a relationship here that needs a lot of investigation, and especially before a woman is pregnant, and you start looking at the epidemic of celiac disease and all the other problems that kids have today. So here's the takeaway message. If you're going to become pregnant, or at least a desired pregnancy, detoxify. Go on a gluten-free diet, and you could help save your kid from later becoming mentally ill. There is a herb, it is called kava, C-A-V-A. It has an interesting story. It's been safely consumed ceremonially in the South Pacific for a long time. The earliest European knowledge of kava dates back to the late 1700s with the journey of a Captain Cook. Today, kava beverages in tropical climates are similar to the use of alcoholic beverages in the West. However, the plant from which the beverage is made from was found to have useful properties for anxiety, hyperactivity, stress, and restlessness. The active ingredients in kava are phytochemicals called cavalactones. Now, there are six major cavalactones that are used to identify the chemotype of variety that are they represent, and that's what you end up getting when you get kava. So we now know that kava and these cavalactones help fight stress, relax your muscles, reduce anxiety, and help with depression and sleeplessness. And the cavalactones are responsible for kava roots calming and anti-anxiety effects, and also some euphoric effects. And the cavalactones are concentrated in the root, and that's the part that's used. So a study conducted at Duke University Medical Center showed that kava extract is safe for helping with stress and anxiety. So for those of you who have been using Kava, you are right to do so because it works. And it's safe. And it's really good for you. And we need some natural ways of dealing with stress. We also need some natural ways of dealing with pain and cramping. And that's where white willow bark comes in. Now, we know that white willow bark has been used for a long time, thousands of years. In fact, the father of medicine, Hippocrates, gave his patients a bark, told them to chew on it, and it reduced inflammation, and it could help with infections. That was white willow bark. And the most common usage of white willow bark is for the relief of headaches, back pain, and joint pain. It's very good if people have chronic inflammation, especially their muscles or they're in their joints. And it's also good for the pain of osteoarthritis. It's very powerful in helping women to reduce menstrual cramping. And generally, women take it a week before they start their menses to help them with their premenstrual cycle. The bark of the white willow tree contains salicin, sal, S-A-L, icin, I-C-I-N, which is a chemical very similar to what is known as aspirin, and which is a salicylic acid. Now, the salicin and the antioxidant flavonoids found in the bark are believed to be the major pain relievers. So, if you want a natural way, not aspirin, which can cause bleeding in the intestine and stomach, and that would be white willow bark. And it also helps with the immune system, and it does a good job. Does the Affordable Care Act work? No. More on that on an upcoming program. I get a lot of calls about this, and I'll explain why I'm opposed to it. By the way, extended TV watching may affect brains of children. Researchers in Japan say the brain scans of children who watch TV over an extended period of time showed a negative impact on high-order brain function. A Dr. Kawashima, professor at the Division of Cognitive Neuroscience Institute of Development, Aging, and Cancer at Tohoku University, did the study. And these were based on kids who were watching television 4 hours a day. The brains of the children and teens were scanned using magnetic resonance imaging, or MRIs. The researcher used longitudinal follow-up data, and they found that the results were negative on verbal abilities and brain anatomy over time. Their article was published in the Journal of Cerebral Cortex. So, limit the amount of television that your kid watches. Also, green tea, make sure that you're not using the caffeinated amount. Too many people are using caffeinated green tea. That actually can keep you up and prevent you from having a good night's sleep. And a lot of people thought, well, having a green tea at night would be good. Yes, especially in cold weather, but make sure it's decaffeinated. If you want to reduce the risk of type 2 diabetes, according to the University of Eastern Finland, fish oil. I'll quote from their scientific study. High concentrations of serum long-chain omega-3 fatty acids can help reduce the risk of type 2 diabetes. And that was published in the peer-reviewed journal Diabetes Care. Mainly it is the fish oils that make a difference. Well, we want to reduce the risk of any form of diabetes, so fish oil can help make that difference. And also, there's an alternative to wheat. It is called einkorn, E-I-N-K-O-R-N. And it's a new grain alternative for those suffering from gluten intolerance. And according to Wake Up World, over the past several years, many who value health are becoming aware of the dangers of gluten. Almost everyone I know is. Especially when it's consumed as modern wheat. Severe digestive problems, celiac disease, rheumatoid arthritis, ADHD, multiple sclerosis, even mental illnesses are some of the maladies linked to the protein in wheat and barley and rye. And as reactions continue to escalate at a staggering rate, we're looking for something to replace it. Well, commonly known as N-corn, which is actually a tri-tysum monococcum, that's the botanical name. It is an intriguing heritage grain that was harvested as early as 16,000 BC, and cultivation began during the Neolithic era and the early Bronze era, 10 to 4,000 BC, and continued in the 20th century, when much of the einkorn production was replaced by hybridized, high-yield, pest-resistant strains. But there's going to be more people looking at something that is a natural replacement for this, for the gluten diet. So you can think about that. And finally, antioxidant supplements, that's vitamin C and E and B complex, can help reduce levels of oxygen radicals, the free radicals, within chronically infected wounds and weaken biofilm sealing these wounds. This is from University of California. Quote, by controlling levels of reactive oxygen species, that's your free radicals, within chronic wounds, they were able to help help get a better outcome. This was published in a peer-reviewed journal and done by the American Society of Cell Biology. So, one more reason to take your antioxidants. I suggest the following. I suggest vitamin C, about 2 to 5 to 10,000 milligrams a day, divided doses. Quercetin, 500 to 2,000 milligrams a day. Coenzyme Q10, between 300 to 2,000 milligrams a day. Vitamin E, between 400 and 800 units a day. Alpha-lipoic acid, between 200 to 1,000 milligrams a day. These are powerful antioxidants. And also, can vitamin D3 influence moods and dispel depression? Yes, it can, according to this study, because the virtues of vitamin D, the sunshine vitamin, are many. And several studies show that preventing and treating mental disorders, including depression, seasonal affective disorder, and anxiety, with higher levels of vitamin D are very, very positive. In fact, there's a speculation that vitamin D deficiency may directly affect the balance of dopamine and norepinephrine receptors, which can lead to symptoms of depression. And other scientific hypotheses revolve around vitamin D3's immune-regulating responses to prevent inflammation, which is often linked with anxiety and depression. So there's a lot of ways that vitamin D can help you, especially with mood. Make sure you take them. I'll just do one more here. I want to share something that most people don't use, and that's hot peppers and the capsaicin that's in them. Capsaicin. These are red peppers, and you got to start off on a small basis, generally with a powder, and you can get the lower heat amount. But the cayenne pepper can aid in weight loss. Cayenne pepper can lower your blood pressure. It can reduce inflammation, all the while giving your food that wonderful spicy kick. It also is antimicrobial. It means that it can reduce bacteria growth in stored foods, and it can reduce mold, and it's great for that. It can help improve circulation because it increases circulation, and it's a valuable herbal treatment for detoxifying, and it can speed the blood flow and healing nutrients to the tissues. It's anti-cancer. There's evidence that capsaicin could be used in the battle against cancer. So, and it eases pain. Capsaicin triggers the release of something known as substance P, which notifies the brain that you've encountered pain, namely the burn of the spice, pepper. He says that Dr. Zachs, that this depletion of substance P can work to reduce the pain you experience from other conditions, including injuries and arthritis. So it'll help you reduce pain, it kills bacteria, helps you reduce weight, it improves circulation, it's anti-cancer. All that is just terrific. I'm Gary Nall. Time for your calls now. Our number to call is 888-874-4888. Look forward to talking with you. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Just said that we were having a little problem on the line, so as soon as we can there we are. Now I'm told the line is open. Now you can call in. Sorry for that. 888-874-4888. Let's say hello to Eric from New Jersey. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good. How can I help you?
All right. Thanks so much. Wanted to ask if you could suggest, I have a relative, who is dealing with liver cirrhosis.
Yeah.
So what would you suggest? I know turmeric would be one of the highest, suggestions, but I wanted to get your protocol on that.
Okay. Well, first it depends upon what were the mitigating circumstances that caused it. Was it alcohol? That's very common. And if causing sclerosis of the liver. Also, was the person on any medications where they check for hepatitis B, A, and C? That also can be a contributing factor. Had they any form of food poisoning or any other form of metal poisoning which could have adversely affect the liver, because it's the liver that is responsible for detoxifying. But let's say that you don't know, and that's kind of an unknown question. And what do we do? Well, here's what we can start to do. First and foremost, give up all foods that have carbonation in them. Coffee in particular is extremely bad for the liver. So you want to give up anything that creates an acidic or a strong acid base to it. So soft drinks, high fructose corn syrup, any form of alcohol, fried foods, especially meat products, they're extremely dangerous to the liver. When you cook a food at a high temperature, you create a chemical. The chemical is called, and by the way, now imagine that you're not only creating a chemical, heterocyclic amines with meat, but then you eat bread or eat that meat with a sandwich, like a hamburger or hot dog. Now you have two chemicals, acrylamides from the carbohydrate in the bread or the muffin, and heterocyclic amines in the meat. Those are two known cancer-causing agents. They also play havoc with the liver. You want to stay away from all artificial sweeteners, artificial coloring agents, artificial flavors, and emulsifiers. You definitely want to stay away from most of the omega-6 fatty acids and go towards omega-3. The healthy fats for the liver would be flaxseed oil, but the most powerful healing oil you can have for the liver would be black cumin seed oil. Then the omega-3 fatty acids separately in the day, then primrose oil and krill oil. Those are your oils. Now, for putting in a smoothie in the morning, you want coconut oil, flaxseed oil. Those are your two best ones in a smoothie. Juicing is powerful when it comes to helping the liver. And the juices that really help the liver would be watermelon and lemon, celery and green apple, cabbage and cucumber together. Those three combinations. Those are the best for the liver. Then nutrient-wise, glutathione. Now, glutathione in and of itself is very poorly absorbed, as is superoxide dismutase. But when you take reduced glutathione, you get a pretty good absorption rate. So I would take reduced glutathione 3 times a day. I would also take what helps produce glutathione in the body, like alpha-lipoic acid and L-glycine. I would then take milk thistle, which is important. And I would also use bitter melon, vitamin C, B6 in particular, vitamin D. All of those are important to help the liver. All right. And then finally, I would give coenzyme Q10. You want to give methylating agents. You want to give agents that get maximum circulation and for detoxification. Now, you mentioned that you would give a particular nutrient. I would give the curcuminoids, which is more powerful, which are the active compounds that are actually in turmeric. Generally, it's 6, 7, 8,000 milligrams. Hope that helps. All the best to you. Let's say hello to Tim from New Jersey. Hi, Tim. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. How you
doing?
Your turn.
I'm doing great. Thank you.
I was wondering, Gary, according to your research that you've done with the status of particularly the Antarctica ice mass,
yes.
Is there a certain elevation that we should consider as being the minimum to be at?
Yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we know from studies this last week that Pine Island, which is the largest extruding peninsula part of Antarctica, is breaking off and is huge. I mean, it's as big as New Hampshire. That's how big it is. And this would create a substantial input of new water into the ocean. But that's only the beginning. Because of the angle that these glaciers, these two major glaciers, one the size of France and one the size of Spain, and how they're angled in the trajectory, they're unstoppable. And that's what the scientists said last week, that you will not be able to stop these. That because of the massive amount of water that is pouring in into the billions of gallons, about $400 billion, I believe they said, that this is going to continue. Now, we don't have a mathematical model of what happens if the front end of these break off and then what's behind them speeds up. There's no way of determining. So they're saying that, yes, this will endanger people who live near the oceans like Miami. It'll be virtually uninhabitable. But think about not just how much the water rises in the overall ocean. Think of what that means when the temperature of the water is warmed and the velocity of a hurricane increases. Now, we saw Sandy, which was a moderate 1. You saw the damage. Imagine if it was Sandy number 5. Now, you have to understand that you don't go from 1 to 2 and it's simply 100 times, it's 1 time more. It's 100 times more. you have a category 5 in its surge, you could have massive surging going into land. So if you weren't up at least, I would say, 150 feet, you could end up having problems with flooding. This was really ironic. 2.5 years ago, I was invited to give a talk on health to a private group in New Jersey in Deal. My friend of long standing asked, would you do this for me? It would mean a lot. And I said, okay, I normally don't do this, but I will. And when I went down there, it was interesting. I talk about health and nutrition. And all the while they're sitting there eating, cookies and cake and drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes. But I didn't blame my friend because, these people were getting a lecture and that was what it was about. And let us always be willing to forgive and say, okay, today you may not be making the healthiest choices, but maybe if motivated and exposed to good information, tomorrow you might. And so I do it always with a positive outlook. And then someone had asked a question in the front row about the environment. And I began to answer, and I said, well, here's a question. You're in Deal. You're right here at the ocean level. Have you prepared in case there's any storm surge, tropical storm, or hurricane? And they said, we don't get that here. And I said, all right, but if you do, do you have backup propane generators? And then I remember someone standing up and saying, look, we came here to hear you talk about health, not anything else. So why don't you get back to health? I said, all right, not a problem. So I talked about health. Afterwards, driving me home, my friend apologized for the rudeness of not just that one woman, but virtually all of them, and said, that she had made a mistake and she exploited the friendship. And I said, look, it happens, let it go. One week later, that tropical storm hit. Every one of the homes in that area were flooded in the basement. I was told that it was between $50,000 to $75,000 per home to get the water out, the mildew out, the mold out. No one was prepared at all. Now, most of those people are wealthy, and they had homes in Brooklyn, and so that wasn't going to change their life much. But it also didn't educate them. A year later, I asked my friends, did any of them learn anything from this? She said, no, not at all. Now, of course, we should have propane generators because with propane, you don't need electricity to get it. It's pressure released. And so if you have a gas generator and then you hit a tropical storm, all right, for a couple hours, you'll have electricity. But then what happens when you need gasoline, you can't find it, or you need diesel and you can't find it? Propane is a different thing altogether, and you should get a big tank, like 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 gallon tank, so you would not be affected. But those people who are now at sea level, we can expect as a norm a Sandy category 3, 4, 5 hitting us in the next couple of years. We are completely, totally unprepared. We won't be any more prepared than we were the last time. And the consequences will be far more devastating. That cost us $50 billion, killed lots of people, displaced people. The next one will be worse. But now, that's the new norm. So you can expect over the next 5 years to see multiple environmental crises hitting. If you live in Oklahoma and the panhandle of Texas, if you live down in Brownsville, you can expect more tornadoes. But also, you can see, with hydrofracking, you're going to see more earthquakes. We can expect a big earthquake out in the West Coast. Just today, Jerry Brown declared that California is now in a state of emergency, a drought, and they're reducing water consumption and massively, and the 200,000 acres of farmland was taken out of farming because they can't irrigate it, and thousands of farmers are cutting back on livestock because they don't have the water to grow the grass for them to graze on, and they can't afford them. It's serious because the Sierra Nevada range, the 400-mile range, is not getting the snow that would melt and provide the water to the streams and estuaries and the rivers from which the communities take their water for farming and for use. And the Little Colorado that also supplies are running out. So all the things I've been talking about that people didn't think were important, now they're important. It doesn't mean that people are going to change. But my suggestion is start now to look at a world where you are not at ground level. You are up at least, I would say safely, 200 feet above sea level. Then that should make a difference. But also remember, people in Vermont who are way above that, up in the Catskills who are 1,000 feet above it, were devastated by the hurricane and flooding and rains. And look at, talk about being above sea level, look at Colorado. I was just out there twice recently, and the driver who was driving me to the PBS station said, we lost 22,000 homes in a matter of hours when a 30-foot wall of mud and water came down that valley, and all those homes, a million-dollar homes, all swept away. He said it, nobody expected it, nobody prepared for it, and everybody lost everything. Well, they're at, 5,000 feet? And so it's not just how far above you are, it's whether or not you're in a floodplain, and so you have to consider that as well. All the best to you. Let's say hello to Andy from Long Island. Hi, Andy.
Hi, how you doing, Gary? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Gary, I'm trying to... a friend of mine is alkalizing his diet, and he got off the coffee, and I'm trying to follow his lead. I'm trying to get off the... How do you get off the coffee? He went cold turkey.
It's relatively easy. First, you should start before you get off the coffee by increasing the amount of B complex up to 100 milligrams a day, but even up higher on vitamin B6, B12, then start to exercise gradually and then build it up to where it's more vigorous, because the exercise will make a difference, and a great deal of difference. All right? So exercise and get it up to about 45 minutes a day, because that will help you tremendously. Then start to take kava and passion flower into the diet. Then also start to try before you go to bed to take magnesium, about 500-600 milligrams elemental from citrate, C-I-T-R-A-T-E, and calcium from citrate. Also begin to take a little feverfew. And then as you start to gradually wean yourself off coffee, increase the amount of non-flush niacin. Generally, it's between 100 to 200 milligrams. And that will increase circulation. Also, start to take vitamin E and mix to tocopherols. That will also help to withdraw. And then increase your vitamin C up to about 7,000, 8,000 milligrams a day. And in that way, you can maybe go through one or two rough days, but then you come out of it very, very well. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
All the best to you. Stella from Manhattan. Hi, Stella.
Hi.
How can I
Hello.
Help you, Stella? Yeah, you're on the air.
Thank you. We would like to know, how do you prevent radiation from the cell phone? Because we're busy 24 hours a day listening to progressive radio. It's so wonderful. But how do we prevent the radiation?
There's two ways. One, put it on speakerphone. You can actually You can actually get a speaker, an independent speaker, and hook it up. You can run it through your computer.
I don't have a computer, just cell phone. That's it.
Okay. But I'm not just answering for you, Stella. I'm answering for all the other people in the audience. All right? Okay. So you can put the speakers on your computer. You can hook a cell phone up to it, a speaker phone, and you can get an enhanced speaker phone. All that will prevent any radiation. You really have to have the cell phone about 6 inches or more away from your head. Or you can get a simple listening device, an earplug that goes in, and you can listen that way. Those are safe ways of listening over the telephone. All the best to you, Stella. Thank you for your call. Let's say hello to John from Brooklyn. Hi, John.
Yeah, Gary, I got off gluten about a year and a half ago, and of course I'm vegetarian and I'm off dairy, but I lost so much weight. I was wondering if you have come across people, is there a problem there, you think? I can't put the weight back on.
It depends upon what else is in your diet, but if you are giving up something that was slowing down your metabolism and adversely affecting your thyroid gland, creating almost a hypothyroid condition, and now you're no longer on that, so therefore your thyroid is rebalanced and your metabolism is balanced, then all you have to do is change your caloric intake at one level, like almond butter, pistachio butter, cashew butter. Those are all great for you. Then increase in avocados, good oils. But then start to take creatine monohydrate, D-ribose, and then do some resistance exercises with the branched-chain amino acids, and you'll start to get muscle mass. And muscle weighs more than fat, so you'll be able to have your muscle back, but you'll look good with it back. So that's not a problem at all. All right? It seems like you're not doing the exercise, and that's what you need to do. I promised I would read this by Ralph Nader, and then I'll come back to your calls, because I think he is just one of our most important citizens, and he helps us. Here's what he says. You've heard the refrain, we live in the information age. We have fingertip access to the internet, providing us with massive amounts of information. There are no longer any excuses for us to say we don't have the information. It's there, but it's up to us to act on the information. Now, the above is all true but very incomplete. Information technology, IT, now the supplier of millions of jobs, does not have its own value-based imperative. The power structure is very selective about what this technology can access so as to keep the power in its concentrated corporate and government hands. For example, if you need only look to how frantically government agencies react when whistleblowers like Chelsea Manning and Edward Snowden tear aside the curtains and reveal widespread mischief and criminal activity. Consider a sample of what a selective information age keeps away from our fingertips, away from the cloud, and away from your smartphones. There's just six of them. One, consumer contracts that bind you and tie your rights and bargaining power in knots are often not available to you. You can sometimes see summaries of what Senator Elizabeth Warren calls mice prints, meaning they're tiny. But you can't find the entire contract behind your airline, train, or bus ticket, your insurance coverage, even your bank accounts or other business you conduct in the marketplace. Naturally, this fine print can take you to the cleaners, exclude you from your day in court, fine you, and allow vendors to unilaterally change the terms of the agreement. Two, as taxpayers, you can get the summaries of many of the $500 billion worth of federal contracts with corporations, but you usually can't get the full text online. You can get some of it if you ask and wait, but most of the bloated or controversial contracts, such as those that are common in the defense industry or the corporate welfare business, remain secret or hidden. Three, many of the products and chemicals in your foods are labeled, but lots more are not labeled, including food from genetically engineered crops and other ingredients known to the producers or processors, but not to you. Four, getting your full medical records that you or your insurance company paid vendors to compile can be a real hassle. Inscrutable, lengthy medical bills, replete with codes and fraud, hide what should be clear itemization for the patients to review. Harvard University expert Malcolm Sparrow estimates that computerized billing fraud and abuse are at least 10% of all healthcare expenditures. Well, that's $300 billion down the drain. You would think with all that waste that they would make it easier for patients to review their medical bills, but not in the selective information age. 5 compared to a generation ago, it's hard to even get a telephone number from the offices of heads of corporations. In some cases, you can't even telephone their secretaries or staff. Limiting access to complaint handlers makes it difficult to complain effectively, to receive a credit score, challenge a perceived overcharge, or any number of problems. More problematic is the chilling impact of a vendor cautioning a tenacious consumer not to press too hard if the consumer wants to maintain their good credit rating. Lastly, residents on a Hawaiian island recently were repeatedly denied information on the pesticides used by an agribusiness that were floating in the air that everyone breathed. The company claimed the information was a trade secret and didn't want to release the information because of its potential competitors. So abuse of the trade secret excuse is extensive and is often used by government regulatory safety agencies like the FDA that are often sworn to secrecy when a company complies with a request to divulge information or wants an approval to sell a product. Toxic or likely harmful matter should never remain secret to increase corporate profits or cover up gross recklessness. The age of information selectively, however, is limited to the Internet. It permeates all levels of the government and corporate operations. We now live in a time of vast government secrecy. Government agencies often flout federal and state freedom of information laws. Even some laws and regulations and executive orders and legal memorandum authorizing dubious government adventures are secret. Under President George Bush and Barack Obama, there has been a surge of secret law, secret court, secret evidence, secret expenditures for violent quagmires abroad, secret prison, secret snooping, arrests without charges, and even, get this, redacted or partially censored court decisions that are publicly published. Combine the above with secret campaign contributions to super PACs, and it's easy to understand former President Jimmy Carter's statement last year that the U.S. no longer has a functioning democracy. In conclusion, at the state and local government levels, the curse of secrecy is rampant. In the District of Columbia, the Office of the Deputy Mayor for Planning and Economic Development has repeatedly refused formal requests pursuant to the D.C. Freedom of Information Act that it produces the contracts regarding the sale of public properties like libraries, fire stations, police stations, and schools to private developers. As public contracts, the law requires them to be posted online for public inspection, even if there has been no request filed by a citizen. Then there is the information that corporate executives deny their owners, the shareholders, from having, often by citing the widely expansive business judgment rule. Sure, shareholders with the rules of the Securities and Exchange Committee get reams of information, but not much of the sensitive information about the company's bosses enriching themselves, making bad decisions, or variously stripping the shareholder of their ownership rights. The examples of critical or game-changing information well beyond your fingertips are legion. So let's not wax ecstatic about the information explosion without paying more attention to the information implosion into the special interest caves of dark secrecy. That's from Ralph Nader. I'm Gary Knoll. To complete our program today, I wanted to share a concept with you. This is an idea given to us by Richard Smith of Truthout. And I was reading it today. It's called Beyond Growth or Beyond Capitalism. And see how this resonates in your mind. First, I'll quote what he has to say. He says, given the relentless growth of global GHG emissions, currently growing at 2% per year, up 70% from 1990, and ever higher concentrations of CO2 in the atmosphere, currently at 400 parts per million, up 30% from 1990, climate scientist Kevin Anderson at the Radical Emissions Reduction Conference today said we face, quote, an unavoidably radical future. Now, the International Energy Agency, the IEA, says that, quote, the current state of affairs is unacceptable. Energy-related CO2 emissions are at a historic highs. And emission trends are, quote, perfectly in line with a temperature increase of 6 degrees Celsius, which would have devastating consequences for the planet, end quote. In similar vein, PricewaterhouseCooper and the UK government chief scientist and a growing body of academics and researchers are allaying current emission trends with 4 degrees Celsius to 6 degrees Celsius futures. And a Dr. Tynell scientist at the conference said he can only draw one possible conclusion, quote, "We either continue with rising emissions and reap the radical repercussions of severe climate change, or we acknowledge that we have a choice and pursue radical emission reductions. No longer is there a non-radical option. Moreover, low-carbon supply technologies cannot deliver the necessary rate of emission reductions. They need to be complemented with rapid, deep, and early reductions in energy consumption. The rationale for this conference is about that," end quote. How much do we need to cut and how quickly to prevent runaway warming? With the declared aim of keeping average global temperatures from rising by more than 2 degrees Celsius, the Kyoto Protocol required industrialized countries to cut their greenhouse gas emissions by 5.2% below the 1990 levels. But they did just the opposite. They didn't. They increased them by over 7%. In fact, if you look at the nation's top emitters of CO2, like China, India, the United States, Japan, and many of the countries in Europe, we're on a trajectory of massive input in global warming. Nothing's being done to reduce it. So then the question is, why aren't we doing something? Well, James Hansen, who we've had on this program, the world's leading climate scientist, quit his job at NASA to devote himself full-time to activism and education and getting himself arrested in front of the White House, trying to impress the president and the public at large that we need radical, deep emission cuts now, or we face an absolute emergency. So then here's the larger question. We have been led to believe that the only way to have a prosperous future is by growth. Everything is determined by how much we have a growth in the gross domestic product, more manufacturing and more products being put into the marketplace, and we're led to believe that that's what we need. And so all around the world, China, India, Brazil, they're talking about 10, 8, 12% gross domestic product. But that means you're using coal-fired plants, and that means you're the people that you are supplying with these new goods and services, including cattle, lots of meat, lots of pork, you're increasing pollution, more air conditioning, more cars. So on the one hand, we're struck with the idea that we cannot continue to consume and manufacture and exploit the resources of the earth, because we would have to have 3.4 Earths for all the resources that we're going to have to take care of all the people's needs. That's not possible. Our resources are finite. And yet there is no movement to stop this. There have been headlines like economic growth cannot continue. The BBC did a report on this and had some very dire projections. And their projections are based upon holding the temperatures to 2 degrees Celsius. Well, now we know that that's not possible. It could go up to 5 to 6. That's a earth changer. That means that crops will not grow. It'll be too hot. That means that fruit trees will dry. That means that honeybees will die. Pollination will not occur. Rivers will dry up. Right now, that's happening to the entire state of California, with Los Angeles and most over 80% of the state on severe drought alert. Governor Jerry Brown just announced that 2 days ago. The worst drought in the state's history. They've already taken 200,000 acres out of production because there's no water. People are told you can't water your lawns anymore or wash your cars. This is just the beginning of what's going to be a very bad time for everyone in California. But it's already bad all over the place. Why have we been refusing to acknowledge this because nobody wants to be the person who says, you're right, let me stop consuming. Well, we're not doing it. We may know we shouldn't be consuming everything, but we continue. So what do we do? What is the way that we should be looking at this? Because capitalism, the current system by which we're so affected, creates global warming, creates global pollution, creates especially toxic chemical pollution. It's probably the next greatest environmental threat we face is toxic chemicals. 80,000 chemicals in the U.S. and only 200 out of 80,000 have ever been tested for toxicity to humans, and only a handful actually banned. They're in our homes, they're in our water, they're in our bodies, our food. They cause birth defects, cancers, chronic illnesses, physical disorders, neurological disorders in children, hyperactivity, deficits. You name it, they cause it. Yet there's no effort to get them out or to stop these new synthetic chemicals from coming in. There's no effort to stop global warming. There's no effort to slow down consumption. There's no effort to tell people we've got to have a new system. Here is my question. I said at the beginning, I just wanted to put in your mind to think about, what do you believe would be a positive way that we as individuals and collectively could stop what we're doing, slow it down, and create healthier, more sustainable ways that did not impact on the environment, did not cause the heat to keep going up, and live with the limits of nature instead of using them until they're depleted? Your thoughts on this, and we'll address this in our next program. Thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Nall. Have a nice day.